Call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:33 p.m. on Monday, January 26th, 2026. Present today are Representative Hannon, Representative Moore, Representative Stapp, Representative Bynum, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin, and the three co-chairs, co-chair Foster, co-chair Josephson, and co-chair Trogge. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tallulah-Lastufka, Secretary Bree Wiley, and Secretary Leah Frazier. We also have our moderator, Emily Mesh, from the Legislative Information Office with us. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. In today's meeting, we will hear the Office of Management and Budget present on the governor's FY26 vetoes. With us today is Lacey Sanders, OMB Director. Joining her from the Department of Transportation will be, when he gets here, Commissioner Ryan Anderson. With us is his Administrative Services Director, Dom Pannone. Director Sanders and I think Mr. Pannone, please come forward and put yourselves or one at whatever you're most comfortable with. I'd rather do it separately, that's fine. Put yourselves on the record and begin your presentation. Presentations.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Good afternoon, members. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders, Director of the Office of Management and Budget for the Governor. I am not going to start with the House Finance Committee presentation. That's before everyone. There should be a variety of spreadsheets in your packet. But before we dive into those, I just wanted to just provide some some brief remarks overall regarding the vetoes from fiscal year 2026. So as the legislature exited the legislative session last year and passed their versions of the operating mental health and capital bills, if you recall from my presentation on Friday, the budget was built at a much higher dollar value based on the spring forecast, which was proposed to be at the $68 value of price per barrel. At the time, in June, the Office of Management and Budget was working very closely with the Department of Revenue as we were monitoring the price of oil dropping very significantly and being very volatile at that point of the fiscal year. So the spring forecast had been released in March. Fast forward several months ahead, we were seeing that price come down. The spring forecast had $68 a barrel. At the time that the governor was addressing the bills and through the veto review process and signing them into law, the Department of Revenue had provided $64 a barrel projection. So we had seen almost a $4 decrease in what we were projecting. And out there on the Department of Revenue's website is a letter from the former Commissioner of Revenue outlining where we were at that point in time and also providing several scenarios. A $5 increase, a $5 decrease, so forth, to give people a general idea of where the remainder of the year was going to be. From there, the governor took that very seriously and wanted to ensure that the state was not in a position of, substantial deficits. And proposed approximately or just about $122 million worth of vetoes between the operating and the capital bill. So today, there should be three spreadsheets in the committee members' packets. Chair Josephson, I wasn't going to walk through line by line. But what I would be happy to do is to start with one of the summaries, and we can talk or address any questions that members may have pertaining to the information. These are the same veto summaries that were released last June when the bill was signed into law. And if that works for the committee, that's how I would offer to proceed.
Sure.
Okay.
Please
proceed. So we could start with the Office of Management and Budget Fiscal Year 2026 Budget HB 53 Veto Summary. This is a one-page summary that encompasses the vetoes that were associated with the operating bill.
It's before us.
Great. And so, Chair Josephson, I will defer to the committee if there are specific items that members would like me to address.
Do members have any questions about the operating budget vetoes? So they total in UGF $57.5 million?
Chair Josephson, that is correct, yes.
And how much is coming back to us as hoped for supplemental?
Chair Josephson, so I will highlight two items on this sheet that we will see that we see already in the December 11th budget that was released by the governor as supplemental items, and they are on row number 24 and row number 27. So line 24 or row 24 is the capitalization of the disaster relief fund. This was a veto of about $10.3 million. With the veto, it would have retained $13 million. When we had worked with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs during this review, we were seeing approximately $1 million per disaster, per month for disasters specific to the Disaster Relief Fund. So that was how that estimate was derived. And so we do have a $40 million request before the legislature, as noted in my last presentation. We saw the Typhoon Halong, which was a substantial cost to the state, and so we are proposing $40 million be added back. For the fire suppression capitalization on line 27, this was a veto of approximately $26 million. It would have retained $47.5 million in the budget for fire response. This item, we do have two notifications to the legislature to address fire totaling $55 million. That number is not the complete number, and we will be talking to the legislature about future requests to address the remainder of costs associated with the fire fund. One thing I will note about the fire fund, and also similarly with the disaster relief fund, is those costs aren't all incurred in one year. They're over time, and so some of the costs that we're seeing associated with the fire fund are related to prior year processes where they've gone out and closed out the fire, and now we have the correct amount that should be associated for the state's cost to address the fire.
Okay. Representative Galvin, and then Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. Thank you, Director, Commissioner. Appreciate you coming to answer some of these questions, and I'm not sure that these will be questions that you can answer, but I'm going to ask since we're having this forum, and it sounds like you're here to discuss the vetoes. There are a few in education that I'm seeing here, and I remember that the governor asked for these, and that's why we were very, very judicious, I should say, careful to not add funds. And where I'm most concerned, I guess, is where at the top line, highest priority teacher recruitment, mentorship, and apprenticeship. I heard over and over how this was such a high priority, and so I guess I'd love to hear if you have explanation about that. If the other is, there was a bill passed by the the 33rd legislature that would give teacher incentive payments for national board certification. That's another one that got completely zeroed out. In fact, we passed this statute, and then we've never funded it. And again, if teacher recruitment and retention is our top priority, I'm concerned that this is where, and it's $500,000. It's not like it's going to make or break the bank for us, and yet that's what was chosen to be removed. So I'm hoping you can speak to that. And then the last one is around the grant, the repeal the grant resource education grant. I know that was a very, oh, I see it's been zeroed out. Never mind, that one is not one. So just those two are vetoes that are concerns of mine.
Through the chair, Director. Representative Galvin, we take this process very seriously when we're going through the veto review process. These were reduced, as you know, indicated on the spreadsheet. Due to declining revenue, they were zeroed out. And I don't have anything further.
What I was hearing from, through the chair, if I may, with a follow-up.
Galvin.
Thank you. What I heard from about other vetoes is that they found ways to make sure that these pieces of work or services, if you will, were kept whole one way or another. And I'm wondering if there was any of that thought for these two vetoes, if we've been able to move positions or move money or move positions so that there is money so that we would be able to follow the statute that we passed.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, no. To my knowledge, no.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Ms. Sanders, I want to go to the Disaster Relief Fund. If I take the supplemental request of $40 million and the fund that after the veto retained $13 million, can I presume that our cost for the fiscal year for disasters is $53
million? Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I wouldn't say it's for that specific year. These are disasters cover multiple years. We work very closely with DMBA to ensure, but yes, $53 million is the total appropriation amount.
Okay. Follow-up. Can you remind me what you have requested in the FY27 operating budget for the disaster fund?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, yes, $24 million for fiscal year 2027. And again, that was based on the 10-year average that we talked about. I did get a bit more information of the difference between a 10-year and a 5-year that was asked from the committee. The 10-year average would actually include the 2018 earthquake, as well as both of the typhoons that the state has experienced. So it's just one way to address the number, open to conversations about what is the correct approach.
Representative Hannon.
Follow-up. I guess I'm just looking, so by including the earthquake of 2018, are we getting to a higher average than we did last year for using a 5-year window?
Sorry about that, Representative Hannon, through the chair.
No.
Calling on a lifeline there. The 5-year and the 10-year are actually similar, but we're still following up with the committee on more detail.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Josephson, and just as a quick follow-up to that question, when we're talking about looking at these numbers and we're looking at 5-year averages versus 10-year averages, specifically when we're talking about disasters, are we looking at any other or considering any other factors in that, or is it purely just the math? So what I'm trying to particularly get at is that we know that when we're looking at things like forest fire, wildfire, or hurricane-type relief, that there's specific models that we can look at and have some kind of an expectation about what is this year going to look like or next year going to look like by looking at those models in general that might inform us that we are going to have a high fire year or not. Are those factors that are being considered or again, are you just looking at a 5-year average and just saying, well, if it's going to be way over, then we're going to come back and ask for a supplemental, or if we think it's too much, we're going to veto or remove it from the budget?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum. So specific to fire, the Department of Natural Resources has a very experienced team that does look at all of the data surrounding fire and what a fire year is anticipated to look like based on, you know, historical information. The proposed budget for 27 utilizes the same amount that was appropriated last year. It doesn't increase. And again, part of that is based on we're capitalizing a fund, and that funding isn't lapsing on an annual basis. So as we see numbers, see the amount that's needed from year to year, we should strive to get some type of average that's going to cover the multiple years. So where you have high years, yes, you have to deposit it in, maybe because of prior years, because we're still getting this fund under our belt. It's a new fund. So hopefully what we'll start to see is that trend line stabilizing with what we're depositing in to cover the highs and the lows, and we'll get away from the swings that we're experiencing.
Follow-up, Representative Bynum.
So specifically, the department is taking into consideration the informed information from the departments that are experts in that area?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, yes, I have met with them on type of information.
Director, I might as well wade in in the middle of the spreadsheet spanning the HB 53, the operating budget. Repeal of, for example, statehood defense funds from previous years. I understand the note well enough. That sounds sort of like the debate over the Juneau Access Road, that the dollars are obligated. And that can be a murky set of facts that could be, I'm not saying in this instance, I'm saying in other instances, perhaps this instance could be disputed. But where? How does the administration, what is the administration's position on efforts by the legislature to claw back undisputed dollars, unobligated, unspent? The governor has struck those, and tell me what the administration's position is on the legality of striking dollars that in a circumstance where there's no dispute they weren't spent.
Chair Josephson, first I want to note for everyone I am not an attorney.
Okay,
I defer any legal type inquiries like that or analysis pertaining to what is legal or not to the Department of Law. I did receive the memo that you had provided in the packet addressing the questions regarding the repeals and the governor's line item vetoing those items. I have shared that with them. They are reviewing it now. I'm going to defer to them. As our perspective, the line item veto is appropriate in this case and was made, and I will defer to any further comments or remarks to the Department of Law on that one.
Okay, and that's fair enough. I wouldn't know in particular whether last summer I had routed this opinion to your office or not. Could have been distracted by any number of things or chose not to. Okay. I guess if the legislature strikes or tries to claw back what we deem to be unspent dollars and spends them over in a different area, entirely different area, the governor, I guess what I'm wrestling with, and again, you may prefer to have the Attorney General speak to this, is shouldn't the governor or could the governor just strike that item? Because that would be a new purpose. And then that gets into the question of, is the governor even allowed to, since it's the same dollars? But this certainly is apropos of part of the reason we're here, I think, on the Department of Transportation issue. So I may be muddying these waters. I don't pretend to be the top expert on this. Representative Hannon.
So So I thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to go to item number 10 on this list. It's a Department of Revenue. It was a $1 veto, but it was a structure within the budget with directive language to decommission the office at the Permanent Fund Corporation that had been created in the previous fiscal year without legislative structure or funding. And my question is, with that veto of a dollar, where does that remain? What structure remains at the Permanent Fund Corporation for funding of a second office that has never received legislative authority or appropriation for it?
Director.
The Chair, Representative Hannon, the administration's stance on this item has been and continues to be that management and administration of functions and programs within agencies is at the discretion of the state, at the discretion of the administration. The Anchorage office, the staff continue to work out of that area. The prior year's appropriations spent from one appropriation, as we continue to do that this year as well.
Follow-up, Representative Hannon.
Follow-up, and thank you, Chair Josephson. And remind me that that office is not located in the state office building in Anchorage, is in a separate facility with a separate lease than other state facilities?
Through the chair. I don't know the physical location. I apologize. I do know it was co-located in a Department of Environmental Conservation's space previously, and I would need to follow up if that is still the case.
Thank you.
And I don't see our attorney, Ms. Marks, on the line now, but if there are questions from the committee about this fairly complicated issue, and now I see her on the line, she is available to answer them. Any other questions from the committee? The subject is vetoing repealers. Representative Galvin and then Stapp.
Thank you. I have just a general question. I happen to note that a third or so of these 29 lines, so nine of them are directly related to education or child care. And that's not counting how we know that things related to health care diseases and things like that are also affecting children, but a third of these are taking away services to children. And I wondered if, you know, you were in the back room, maybe you know, was there some understanding that because we got other things passed, or was there any thought around education's taken care of, so let's scoop some out of that. I'm looking for an understanding for this, because it's when you look at it like this, you can really see that many of these lines are directly affecting our children.
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I don't have anything else to add for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Coach Justin, through the chair, to Saunders. Thank you again for being here. I'm trying to go down memory lane again, because Coach kind of made some comments earlier that got my brain thinking in terms of encumbered funds and monies and stuff like that. Can you walk me through when the administration had these funds that were later used by the legislature for reapprope kind of encumbered? Because I know that there's kind of a time delay on the CASR and stuff like that. So when did we decide, hey, because, you know, our report comes out in like November, and then we have the construction season, and then typically money gets appropriated quite quickly or encumbered quite quickly to get projects out the door, through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp. So, and we can turn to the capital page next if the committee would like. So We have a process at the Office of Management and Budget. It's quite intensive as far as the work that the departments need to do to go through what we refer to as the Capital Appropriation Status Report, or CASR. So there is a date selected. We pull information from our state's accounting system. It is a point in time. And the departments work through their process to go through project by project and provide updates on those. Once they're done with their review, it comes to the Office of Management Budget. We go through our review, and then that report is publicly due to the legislature in January. So we have a significant time delay between when we're pulling information from our accounting system and reporting it to the legislature. Fast forward to March, April, May, when the legislature is working on rolling out their versions of the operating or the capital budget that utilizes reappropriations, the information in that report is now up to 6 months old. I think there is an opportunity for us to work with the legislature to get more detailed information or more updates. I don't think we have the capacity in state agencies to go through an entire CASR review again, just because it does take such a significant amount of time, especially for agencies like the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities or the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. But ensuring that we have more accurate information for the legislature to make decisions is something that we can definitely work towards, so that we aren't putting ourselves in a position where the departments are continuing to operate and work on the projects that they have been assigned, and they have obligated obligated the funds through legal contracts between that November timeframe and March or April.
Follow-up, Representative Stamp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Justin, to the chair. I think that's very helpful. Obviously, you know, kind of fairly understandable that we would operate on a time delay here. And CASR report's huge, like thousands of lines of stuff going on there. So I'm curious, did anybody like reach out to you guys and say, hey, before we steal this money, we're going to make sure that you didn't have a contract side or anything like that before they did the reappropriations through the chair?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I was not reached out to on any items on getting updated information. But that doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of conversations occurring. I would hope that you know, we could get the most updated information in a formal process to the legislature to ensure we're on the same page.
Faultless, Co-Chair.
Follow-up, Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair. Yeah, it seems kind of weird to me that we wouldn't want to reach out to the OMB director. I mean, obviously you're not going to always have all the information, but I hope in the future that, you know, people in this body and the other body will kind of remember that the administration, that there are lots of moving pieces, and we don't really want to be in the business of kind of micromanaging departments. And in the event that we kind of have these ideas again, maybe we'll give you a call next time, I hope, through the chair. Thanks.
I see Representative Bynum, Tomaszewski, and then Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Joseph. And if I could just wait to ask my question and
sure.
Go ahead and let the others go first.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Joseph. Actually, this is for question for the chair. In regards to your memorandum dated June 24th, 2025, I don't know if I've seen this before. I guess it was up. Loaded like 15 minutes before the meeting. Was there any response from the governor or attorney general? Have you solicited a response to this memorandum from the governor? Is there anything on record for that?
The short answer is no. The longer answer might be not to dispense with the short answer. The answer is no. But this does raise some key separation of powers issues. The committees that normally would take that up would be, I think, LBNA and Legislative Council. And I sit on LBNA, but no motion has been made yet relative to this issue.
Okay, so no
response? I mean, the vetoes were made at the time this memo was prepared. Had I shared it with them, they weren't going to undo the vetoes. So I didn't share it with them, with the administration.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You bet. So now Representative Bynum, then Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice. And I think it's a – I was going to ask something similar about this particular memo. I think it's important for the conversation that had been had. And I don't know that – I had seen the document before, so this was kind of the first time to really go through it briefly. And I was hoping – because you'd mentioned the fact that the attorney was on the line. I was hoping that you could re-clarify what the question actually was, how it's important to this conversation, and then having the law department give a layman's terms mm-hmm. of what their opinion actually is. I mean, like I said, it's the document I think has a lot of speak for itself in there, but it is a legal document. Mm-hmm. So it would be better to kind of understand that so we have it in context to this conversation today.
I'd be happy to do that. Ms. Marks, are you with us on the line?
Yes. Hope you can hear me okay. I'm using the new Ring telephone system for the state. But for the record, this is Marie Marks with Legislative Legal Services. And I think through the chair, if you could just restate the question, I think it can be put into plain language, the question and the answer of the memorandum. Is that right?
I think that's fair. Yes.
Sure. Yeah, through the chair, Representative Bynum, I think the layperson's quick question and answer is, does the governor's constitutional veto power include the ability to strike language that does not appropriate a sum of money? Here, striking language that repeals previously enacted appropriations. This has not squarely been addressed by the Alaska Supreme Court. But in 2001, in a case that talked about what is an appropriation item and what does the governor's veto power encompass, the court said strike or reduce means reducing is an item, it lessens its amount, and striking means it lessens it to nothing. And so I think there's a real issue here about what power does the governor have to strike the language that repeals an appropriation. Since, as you know, when you strike a repeal, you're not lessening an amount to nothing. You're actually raising the amount of the appropriation. That's it as concisely as I can explain it. I'm a lawyer, so keep that in mind. But if you'd like further clarification, I'd be happy to give it a go.
Ms. Marks, I have a question for you. If monies are repealed or there's an attempted clawback, presumably based on facts known by the legislature that those dollars were unspent and held. And could the governor then veto the reappropriated dollars from that repeal? In other words, could he not strike the SLA language as he did, the Session Law of Alaska language from the previous years, but strike the new expenditure?
Again, for the record, remarks with Legislative Legal Services to the chair. That is an interesting nuance. That's not what happened here, but if the legislature makes an appropriation, and a reappropriation would really be a new appropriation using money that was unspent, then the governor would have the power to, for that new appropriation, I think, reduce the amount of that new appropriation or strike that new appropriation, as long as the quantitative effect is to diminish the amount appropriated. That's what the court said in Knowles. The effect that the power the governor has is to diminish the amount appropriated. So as long as that occurs, then I think it's within the governor's constitutional power to veto an appropriation item.
All right. So I've got a lineup here. Representative Bynum, were you done with your questions for the time?
Oh, for the time.
All right. So what I see on my list next is Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. And I'm going to use somewhat of Representative Staff's inspiration and question to Director Sanders, but I'm going to ask DOT, Mr. Pignon, before the reappropriation language, because the largest reappropriated money was DOT monies from previous projects that was then going to be used for federal match and that was vetoed. was the Department of Transportation Public Facilities requested to provide information on whether those funds were fully expended or obligated?
Mr. Pannone.
For the record, Dom Pannone, Director of Program Management and Administration at DOT. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, for some of the reappropriations for our match, Legislative Finance Division had reached out for new balances from the CASR. As we discussed, the CASR is a point in time. The Legislative Finance Division and some legislative staff reached out and asked for specific balances. We provided updated balances and then provided a letter advising that these were needed, that those match balances were needed for August redistribution. They had already been incorporated into our project delivery plan, and that the age did not negate the need for a new additional match, which we had requested. On the other reappropriations of the projects used in our match, such as Cascade Point and a project in the Matsu Valley, I don't recall any conversation on that. And some of the other projects were not our DOT appropriations, so I can't speak to those.
Follow up,
Rep. Hannon.
So did the other bodies, Finance Committee, Capital Chair's Office, reach out to ask for accurate, up-to-date data before the reappropriation of money that was in DOT, the Cascade, well, it's Juneau Access Project money at the time, before that was put in the capital budget as a reappropriation?
Mr. Pannone.
And through the chair, Representative Hannon, and we have a whole slide dedicated to the Juneau Access Project. I'm not aware of a request being made from the other body or any legislative body.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you. Co-Chair Shragi. Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Similar line of questioning, or just to pick up where Representative Hannon left off, when, with respect to the Cascade Point projects, were those funds encumbered? Was that after the legislative budget came out, or can you give me a timeline on that? Mr. Pannone.
Do you want me to fast forward to it?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Representative Shragi, the Cascade Point project, so we have the timeline here. Going back to April of 2021. So on this slide, we show at the top the $4.5 million that was spent to date prior on design, prior to the reappropriations. You can see the engineering and feasibility and then 35% design build. So we were in the process of going to contract out the work prior to the reappropriations. The specific date of the contract, I don't, if it's on here, I don't have at the top of my head, but it would have been prior to the effective date of the bill. And was certainly prior to the any action taken on the bill. And our commissioner may have anything to add.
Commissioner, welcome.
Yeah, Chair Josephson, thank you. Yeah, on this one, we wanted to build the timeline so everyone could have, because we understood that this was a big focus for us. And you can kind of see on this slide, you know, the different dates and how we went through. Just to show that when we're going through that project delivery process, I mean, we're making a lot of commitments ahead of time. And so when we get to the end, you know, and we're awarding contracts, there's a significant investment that's been made. And on this slide, it's $4.5 million that was spent to date on that as well. So hopefully this provides some clarity on Cascade Point and the timelines and the different milestones for all of you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Commissioner, can I ask why the department did not request that the money that had been designated for Juneau Access be reappropriated to Cascade Point so that this confusion didn't develop, so that we knew that it was being spent? Because It is my understanding we kept asking for how much is left in the fund, and there was no updated money. But if your timeline shows that it was obligated, why weren't we either asked to reappropriate it so that we know it's being spent and it's been obligated, or we got accurate information to work from?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Hannon. I'm not aware of being asked prior to the reappropriation for the balances on Cascade Point. This was something, you know, we'd always gone forward that the, you know, the scope of those appropriations was a fit for the Cascade Point project. So that's how we were moving that one forward.
All right. Co-Chair Shragi.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. To the Director of DOT, I guess, or to OMB, I guess, how would you interpret the legislature's reappropriation of those funds? I mean, what do you interpret the legislative intent to be if those funds are reappropriated to meet federal match?
For the record, this is Lacey Sanders, just because there have been a lot of voices. Through the chair, Co-Chair.
Chair, can I interrupt for just a minute? I apologize. Can we get closer to the mic? Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry about that. So through the chair, Co-Chair Shragi. Sorry, I totally lost my train of thought there. That's okay.
Co-Chair Shragi, for the record, the intent, how do you interpret the intent of the legislature in our reappropriating the Cascade Point funds?
Through the chair, Representative or Co-Chair Shragi, I don't ever want to speak on behalf of legislature. But by putting forward a reappropriation, the signal to and the narrative behind it was to utilize balances of projects to meet that match. The concern from the administration's perspective, and I think Commissioner Anderson and I will both share and be in agreement, is we don't want to put ourselves as a state in a position where we don't have the match because those funds have already been obligated or are no longer available because they've already been spent. That would set us up for a situation where we can't meet our federal obligations. And so the action was reduce, veto those appropriations and come back to the legislature with a request for unrestricted general funds to meet that obligation as a state. So do you have anything else?
No.
Follow-up, if I may.
Yes, follow-up, Co-Chair.
Yeah, I mean, as a legislator, just speaking for myself, in a constrained revenue environment, I think we have to balance our priorities. And my, as a co-chair of the Finance Committee, having worked closely with the other body, but not to speak for them, I'd say I think that we made it clear that we felt that meeting federal match was more of a priority than putting up the funds for the Cascade Point project. And I'm not going to speak to your intent, but or the administration's intent more specifically, but it seems to me that the administration's point or the effect is to say we're not going to meet the federal match, we're going to go back to the legislature to find a new funding source, and we're going to move forward with Cascade Point anyways. And just as the appropriating branch of government, I find it very problematic and difficult for us to find trust through the appropriating process. So I guess we're going to have to work more closely this next year as we navigate this process to make sure we have clear communication to follow up on Representative Stapp's line of questioning. I'll say for our part, there was communication with the departments on many of these reappropriations, and we're going to have to figure out a way to get more clear information from the administration. Question.
Okay. So I have Representative Stapp, then Allard. And if there's someone I've missed beyond that, let me know. Representative Stapp.
Oh, thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair to Director. And Commissioner, thanks for being here.
Yep,
always a pleasure. Good Fairbanks people. Yeah. Through the chair. So I kind of want to know, just for the public, what happens if we have a contract and we basically rug pull the money? Like, are we legally obligated for the contract? Like, so we say, to me, it's like, okay, we put out money, we have a bid, we put an RFP, this is a complicated, long process. And then the contractor's like, sure, and we award the bid, and then we say, oh, by the way, we just stole the money for the bid. What happens through the chair?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. Yeah, that would be a breach of contract. I think it would set a dangerous, a precedent across our contracting community. to be unsure that when we, you know, sign a contractual obligation, that will the money be there? You know, we work hard to make sure that our contracts and what we've got out there is solid. You know, and we have a good reputation across the board for the state of Alaska. So that's something that, you know, we think hard about, and we want to make sure we're solid on.
Faultless Co-Chair.
Yes, follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair. Through the chair, again to Commissioner. I don't get in the nitty gritty of these. I know you guys do a great job at DOT doing that. A lot of these contracts, I'm sure they have clauses in there where basically once we're locked to an agreement, we have to kind of pay anyways. I mean, or I guess we could just break them arbitrarily. I mean, I don't know if people in industry would probably like it if we just started breaking contracts willy nilly, but I'm just curious if there's any penalties or anything like that for breaking the contracts, through the chair.
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. Yeah, you know, when a contract is, even when they're gearing up because they know a contract, maybe we haven't even awarded it yet, but, you know, there's an intent to award out there. We have a great contracting community in Alaska. They go out and they take a lot of risk ahead of time when they're securing materials, long lead time items. You know, equipment has to get mobilized. You know, it's tough in Alaska to get these places. So there's a fair amount of money on the line. You know, the last thing we would want is to pull the rug from under them. And once the contract's signed, of course, we have a legal obligation to those payments. So, yeah.
And Commissioner, that's why this committee has filed a supplemental bill, frankly.
Absolutely.
You know, last fall.
And that's certainly an important point. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair. So last quick follow-up on that. You know, I guess my biggest fear would be like if we start being in the kind of the behavioral process of putting out RFPs and not fulfilling the kind of obligations or pulling them after even we award a bid, maybe we don't sign the contract, but we're in that process of awarding, like we'll just kind of undermine the faith in our general contractor industry in the state. But I do have an actual pertinent question about my Fairbanks Armory that caught fire 2 days ago that's also on the veto list. For the upgraded maintenance, if I could ask that really quickly through the chair. Obviously, the armory, we had money for the modernization for the barracks, caught fire 2 days ago. Like, is this helpful? I mean, did we do the modernization? I mean, I don't know. Like, I hope we didn't modernize it and then burn down, I guess, through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, that fire was brought to my attention this afternoon. I do expect that, as with most fires when we experience with state facilities, we would go through a process of ensuring that insurance covers the costs associated with that. The modernization piece clearly didn't move forward due to the veto, so but happy to follow up further if you'd like.
Yes, quick one. Quick follow-up on that.
Follow-up?
Yep. Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair. Well, I guess there's a bright side to a veto then, because rather than spending the money on the modernization, the building caught fire before we spent it. So always looking at the bright side. Thank you, Co-Chair.
I see Representative Allard next in the queue.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. You're not in a firing squad. I appreciate everything you do in Eagle River, by the way. My sidewalks are cleared, and there's no, like, ruts on the road, so they're appreciative. And thank you for addressing the ice dam on Eagle River Road. I kind of wanted to do a little bit of a follow-up with, thank you, through the chair, on what Stapp was saying. So, Representative Stapp, this body last year reallocated funds or reappropriated funds to go different areas, and they pulled funds from projects that were already underway. And I voted no, just on the record. So I guess my curiosity is, are you saying that because that happened that it did impact when the governor decided to veto certain items to stop it with the reappropriation of these funds?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Allard. Yeah, I mean, that was part of, you know, as we're moving forward and the after the legislative action, yeah, we had a lot of questions about, you know, where these projects were at, what was going on, and how that would work. So, yeah, that was a concern for us, absolutely.
May I do a quick follow-up?
Of course.
Thank
follow
you.
Up. Representative Allard.
Instead of us as a body looking down the road, there are consequences when we do certain actions. And I guess what I'm hearing you say is that there were consequences to our actions of reappropriating the funds.
Yeah, through the chair. Yeah, Representative Allard, yes, of course.
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Galvin. Representative Bynum?
Okay. My question's been answered. Thank you.
Co-chairs, Co-Chair Shragi?
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I think my question is in terms to the statement about the long lead times necessary for contractors to gear up for the season. I'm thinking in particular about, well, I mean, the lead times must be quite substantial even for an urban project, but thinking about some of the work that may take place in Western Alaska or more remote parts of the state, when does DOT start to get concerned about our how much notice do contractors need ahead of time about the projects that are going to be going to bid that summer to be able to do work in say Western Alaska? How long out is that planning period?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Shragi. Yeah, it can really vary depending on the type of work. You know, if there's anything that requires transportation of like steel products and those types of things that have to get fabricated, there's a whole other time frame that has to get factored in as well there. A lot of times when you look at our rural aviation program for Western Alaska, when we get the grants and we go out to bid, let's say in August, September time frame, you know, it'll be all winter and sometimes the next summer even just to get mobilized for the following fall. And so it is a long, yeah, and depending on where you're at.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. Thank you for being here today. Appreciate it. You know, we talk a lot about readiness of the contractor workforce to do construction for Alaska and provide quality projects for us. Mm-hmm. And I know that here over the last several years, historically, we've seen very much volatility in the amount of money that we have available for capital projects, not just DOT match money, because it feels like that's really all we've been funding. Can you talk just briefly about when we have volatility in available dollars, when we're only trying to meet the minimum of match versus what the scope of need is in the state, on how that impacts the quality and the availability of contractors that we're seeing in the state?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Bynum, and thank you for that question, because I remember us being here last year and talking about this, and that was the topic, and there was concern from this committee about DOT getting projects on the street. And so we were really pushing, you know, to get those projects on the street, which resulted last year, you know, we pushed our teams, and we got a record $183.5 million in August redistribution. I mean, we had over $1 billion capital program year by leveraging really every tool we had, including the capital funds, including our federal funds, and just really, you know, making that a possibility. We have a group of contractors in this state that are pretty phenomenal. They tend to work in different areas and expertise, like Western Alaska, for example. We have a group of contractors that can work in Western Alaska. We have a group of contractors that are good at urban environment. We have a group of contractors that, you know, kind of like working on the Dalton Highway up north, which is a whole different animal. And so really to keep that constant workload so that they can keep their work going in those different areas is really important to us. We're working on our new statewide transportation improvement program, which will be that'll be one of the topics here coming up soon. But that's part of when we're looking across the state, we got to make sure we maintain that balance of work as we, you know, look at how we allocate those federal funds, which are so important right now.
Commissioner, do the contracts that you let, do they remind the recipient that they're subject to appropriation? Now, I understand there was an appropriation in this context, but I assume they say that.
Chair Josephson, we'll get back to you on that. I mean, there's specific contract language in terms of reasons for default and termination. And so there may be a clause in there. I would have to double check that. We have very standard contract language that we use. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, Representative Hannon.
Thank you. I have one for DOT and then a simple question for OMB, I think. So I'm going to ask it first, which is I love it when the barracks tell us, you know, it's the Fairbanks Barrack, but I got Camp Carroll and Camp Denali. Will you remind me where those two are located so that I have it accurately? They're both on J-Bear?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon. Thank you for letting me get a lifeline J-Bear.
Okay. And that's, I guess, both on J-Bear. Okay. Then I do want to ask follow up.
Yes, follow up.
Commissioner, one of the vetoes was maintenance Dalton Highway, milepost 76 to 89, $2.5 million. So my question is, was any maintenance done on that stretch, and will you remind us of the mileage? I don't think that's the big slough, because I think that's at mile like 150 or 170. Mm-hmm. So it's closer to Fairbanks, and I guess I'm wanting very specific mileposts called out, so I assume there was a specific project need, and if this money was vetoed, was that maintenance done with other revenues?
Commissioner.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon. Miles, the 70 mile is past, if you've been up on the Dalton, past the Yukon River Bridge, it's north of that. We have done a lot of work up there. We're really leveraging right now our preventative maintenance funds on the Dalton Highway, and we actually have a pretty interesting thing we're working on right now as we get, you know, with the Alaska Gas Line, where Fed Highways is working with us, where we might be able to just do a big aggregate stockpiling program along the entire length of the Dalton Highway to really make sure we're ready for what comes next. But yeah, that we have work every year on the majority of the highway. I can find out for those specific mileposts, you know, what we had going on for this past summer.
Follow up.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. And I guess I will just let you know that I had the opportunity and did drive the Dalton Highway this summer in a commercial rig. And the ongoing frustration of that driver was that pile of gravel has been sitting there for 5 weeks, and it's just sitting there. And why aren't they just filling some potholes with it? And my recollection, it was sort of in that stretch, and I said I would always ask. So from the driver's seat, their thought was, there it sits, and now we're not going to do anything with it, and it just will sink into the tundra on the abyss if we don't at least spread it on the road. And they were, you know, kept joking about maybe we should just jump out and spread it ourselves if DOT can't spread it in those potholes. I didn't want to advocate for that, but.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Chair Josephson, through the chair. I know we're going to get another opportunity to have a long conversation about the upcoming budget and the needs of the Department of Transportation, some of the concerns I think that I have and the committee might have with how we're making investment in the state through capital spend, and whether or not fully utilizing federal match and other dollars to not just do new construction, but the maintenance portion that I think is overlooked many times that can extend the life of contracts or projects and also create continuity between projects. So there's some. I definitely have a lot of concern about that because I think that we are definitely underfunding our capital programs. But specifically, there was a question asked from the co-chair about contracts, and it made it sound like that you are issuing contracts without an appropriation in place. And is that actually something that's happening, or is it – I know that we do intent for projects, kind of gear up. It's going to be pending appropriation to kind of put the word out there, and then, of course, we put the contracts out when we get the appropriations. But is it general practice that we would be doing a contract without appropriation in place?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Bynum. No, we always have the funds are always in place, and they're backed by appropriations before we issue a contract. And you know, typically that we call it they're encumbered so that there's no other – you know, competition for those funds as well.
So it's a follow-up.
Yes, follow-up.
So maybe the opportunity where we wouldn't continue a contract is if there was optional phases in the contract that are pending appropriation. That could potentially be the case in a contract where you might put a contract out for phase one work with the option to extend or award pending future appropriations. Is that accurate?
Commissioner?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Bynum. There are situations. Western Alaska is an example where the Federal Aviation Administration, for example, will issue staged grants. And so 1 year we'll get a grant for a certain scope of work, and then they've given us that assurance, and we have a good relationship. It's not an appropriation. It's just an assurance that, hey, you know, provided, you know, everything goes normally as it normally does, you know, we'll give you the second phase the following year. So we'll structure our contracts, and we'll structure them so there is a way out if for some reason it didn't happen.
Thank you for the clarification. Thank you. Anyone else? Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Coach Joseph, and through the chair to Commissioner, and then Ms. Saunders after that, I guess. So just regarding the Dalton Highway, I mean, I don't know if maybe it's like who your favorite child type of question is. To me, the Dalton Highway is like probably the most important transportation corridor we have in Alaska because it's kind of the vitals. It's the heartbeat of our industry. And I'm curious if you would, I mean, maybe you got to put some nuance on that statement through the chair, but I'm curious how you as commissioners see that through the chair.
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stapp. Yeah, thanks for that question. I, too, have been up the Dalton Highway in a 10,000-gallon fuel tanker that was full. I did that ride. It's a challenging environment. What a lot of people don't remember is it's 500 miles from Fairbanks to Prudhoe Bay. And we know how to fix it. I mean, if you drive the last 30, 40 miles up into Prudhoe Bay, it's probably the most beautiful paved road, you know, you've been on. I mean, it's amazing. But we had to that took a lot of investment to, I mean, over $100 million to get there. You know, we have this plan. Over the past 10 years, I think we're up over $500 million in what we've invested in the Dalton. We're at $500 million in what we're planning with our current, what we think, you know, our statewide transportation improvement program can afford over the next 10 years. And so really it's you know, it's a limited resource. You know, we keep investing on the capital side. We absolutely love to have state funds. And years ago, there were some pretty big state appropriations, and our folks did some amazing things up there because you can move a lot quicker with the state funds to get that heavy maintenance done. And so you'll see, you know, we're trying to work ways with the Federal Highway Administration to see if we can get some more flexibility to do more of those types of things. But really, it's just that limited resource, and we're balancing it across the state is the challenge there. But I agree that Dalton Highway is absolutely important for the state of Alaska.
Yeah, fault, Mr. Co-Chair.
Follow up, Ribbon Staff.
Yep, thank Co-Chair Justin through the chair to, and this is going to go to Ms. Saunders this time. So thanks, Commissioner, for articulating that. Very good nuance, by the way. Of course, every system, transportation system, is important in the state. Living in the interior, I have a certain love for the Dalton Highway, obviously. I'm curious, Director, I kind of your stances on the consistency of fund sources. So when I look through some of these veto summaries, it kind of strikes me as things that this body decided to appropriate with general funds as opposed to fund through some sort of reappropriation kind of mechanism. In this case, the veto was because the fund source was basically ADA funds that were reappropriated for the purpose of something as critical as the Dalton Highway, as opposed to UGF dollars for window replacements in Mount Edgecombe or something like that. So in your role as OMB director, like, what is a more consistent fund source? So if we're going to prioritize what we value as a legislative body, I mean, would that be general fund dollars, or would that be reappropriations through some sort of state-owned enterprise through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp. That's a hard question to answer. As our fiscal situation has continued to decline, you can ask any commissioner that I work with or admin services director. I frequently am asking, are there projects on the CASR that we could potentially reappropriate for another purpose? We should be evaluating those. There's a lot of items on that list. There are a lot of old items on that list. But we want to be very thoughtful about what we're saying is no longer a priority in the state and what should be a priority of the state. So I don't think that there is any opposition to reappropriations. It's ensuring that there's actual revenue behind that reappropriation before we put it forward. That I think is more important. We don't want to put a reappropriation forward that has $0, then we're not getting the benefit of being able to utilize that revenue towards the new item that we're talking about. When it comes to funding sources, I think the last time I looked at the list, there was over between 350 and 450 different unique funding codes that we have in the state and that we utilize, all with specific purposes. Some of those are, you know, constitutionally required. Some of those are statutorily designated because the legislature has determined that that should be an important use. I don't think that there is a right or a wrong one. I think it's important to evaluate them on a case-by-case basis. I have seen, for example, appropriations made from the Higher Education Investment Fund for certain purposes that are outside of the statutorily designated program. And maybe that is a good reason for that year to meet that purpose. So I don't want to say there's a right or a wrong. I want to I do think that we should evaluate each appropriation to ensure that it's prioritizing the need, and not to say that the Dalton Highway in this case that you're talking about on line 21 is not important. We recognize the importance for those particular items. The decision was that we're not going to use ADA reserves for purposes outside what has been statutorily designated.
Yeah, and last follow-up on this, Mr. Kocher.
Last follow-up.
Yep, thank you, Kocher, through the chair, Ms. Saunders. Yeah, no, I kind of completely understand, and really for me, and obviously this isn't a your prerogative, this is more a legislative prerogative, but it's just interesting to see how we would take something as vital as the Dalton Highway and use reappropriate funds for that, but we would fund, on, for example, on line 17, the National Historic Preservation Fund with $1.3 million in general funds. You'd think that we would take something as important as the Dalton, use general funds for that, and then reappropriations to fund the Historic Preservation Fund. But that was the purpose behind the question about the veracity and the reliability rather of fund sources. Mm-hmm. Thanks,
Representative Moore. I've been remiss. You had asked for a question.
Yeah. No. Thank you, Chair Josephson. Thank you, Commissioner Anderson, for being here. We had a really robust construction season in the Valley this year, and your team was wonderful working through lots of obstacles and questions from constituents. So I appreciate Mr. Mills a lot. Alaska's construction season is limited in scope and fragile. And so maybe for the public that's listening, we are talking a lot about contracts and appropriation and different things. And maybe you can just kind of walk us through the impact of these funds being vetoed, what that looks like for us, and how important it is to capture these funds again.
Commissioner.
Through the chair, Representative Moore. Yeah, I mean, I think everyone recognizes, I mean, the value of Alaska's construction season in the summer. Last year, I think we were over $1.3 billion, in what we were working to secure, and we did get secured. And that's really projects. Yeah, it's the Mat-Su Valley, it's Fairbanks, it's Anchorage, it's the Parks Highway, it's the Sterling Highway, it's the Dalton Highway. It's just across the, I mean, there's so much. And I know, driving the highways in the summer is always kind of a bummer because of the construction delays. But that's work, that's project, that keeps our infrastructure in good shape. I mean, that's what it takes. It keeps our contracting community healthy. It really just keeps everyone, it keeps everything going. For Alaska, we have a lot to be proud of with our infrastructure and our highway and airport system on the highway side. You know, we meet all of our pavement and bridge federal performance measures. And we have some really, we have a good team of in-house and contract engineers out there that, are working on these bridges, making sure that our bridges out there are up to snuff. And there's times when, we recognize there's some challenges. And, man, we can move on things to fix things quickly, too. So, really, it's just the project delivery world, when you're working through it, it's not a one-year type endeavor. It's really, some projects will take 5 to 7 years to get through the process. And so you don't want to disrupt the funding flow, because when the funding starts changing, engineers stop work, they go start working on something else, and that's lost time, it's lost money, it's a lost opportunity to improve our infrastructure. So really, that's the piece that we're always looking out for, just having that stability. So what's there, we can expect, we can get those projects across the finish line that we've been working on, and just keep Alaska moving, which is our mission.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up. President Moore.
This question is for Ms. Saunders. Maybe you can explain a little bit, or maybe you have some intel on what the fiscal rationale was from the administration with vetoing these funds.
Through the chair, Representative Moore. So the conversation surrounding the specific statewide transportation improvement program really had to do with whether the funds were obligated and we had something in place that made, like I was talking just a moment ago about reappropriations, that money no longer being available and leaving a hole in our funding to match the federal program. So with working through, you know, what those items were that were going to be reappropriated and determining whether that they were already obligated or had a contract in place, the decision was to not reappropriate those to the program, to come back and ask for the general funds directly to meet that state match so that those projects could continue and we could get more projects out on the street.
That's unfortunate. Thank you.
Representative Hannon, and then Shragi and Bynum.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. And I apologize when we return to the Dalton Road, because sitting in a truck cab for 14 hours with a driver who'd been driving it for more than 40 years. And I will tell you, you used the magic words, and I told him as soon as it ever came up, I would ask. Paving sections of the Dalton Road from the driver's perspective, and when we hit that intact last 30 miles, he said, this will last 2 or 3 years, and why do they keep paving sections that we're going to have to redo? Why don't we just keep it gravel? And since you mentioned that last 30 miles of paving that's all intact right now, from the driver's perspective, that won't last long because of the conditions of the Arctic road building. So why are we paving instead of just graveling and blacktopping?
Commissioner.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon. Yeah, we put that pavement in place. I think it was a result of the 2015 when the road washed out and the floods. So it's been there since 2017. So that we've got 8 years on that. So that's pretty good. I mean, typically for an Arctic pavement just itself, you know, we'll get 15. If we get 20 years, we're doing really good, but 15 years. There's a lot of maintenance savings, and when we look at our operating budgets, I don't know if people know this, but when you're driving the Dalton Highway in the summer, there's a lot of dust. That dust is our fines from our road surface. We can lose anywhere from a quarter to three quarters of an inch of our road surface a year just in the dust. And so by having that, you know, paved surface, that reduces the amount of additional, these piles of gravel we need for the surfacing and everything. It reduces that immensely. It saves us a lot of funds. And we have a minimal staff, right? On the Dalton Highway, we have maintenance camps about every 30, 40 miles. And there's so many people there that can cover so much ground. And so the maintenance that you can do, when you can pave a big section, they get to go work on those more challenging gravel sections that we don't always get to. So that's really, if we could pave more, we would. There are some areas where the amount of money it would take, because we'd have to, you know, raise the embankments and insulate and do all these things, it would be a hundreds of millions of dollar project to make it stable. So we haven't, you know, done a lot of sections like that. But I don't have the stats, but I think it's about 40% of the Dalton's paved now. There was a big push back in the early 2000s when I started at DOT to pave the whole Dalton Highway, and that, you know, that got so far. So that's still something. We aren't actively looking to pave the whole Dalton Highway right now, because we're cognizant and we do listen to the truckers. And so there's areas where, you know, we would like to do more, and then there's areas that, you know, we wouldn't.
Thank you. Co-Chair Shragi.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Returning to the vetoes, thank you, Representative Moore, for bringing them up. You know, we've talked about a number of things in the context of this conversation, the long lead times for the construction industry, and also the certainty needed to be able to plan for a construction season. I know we've given certainty to the Cascade Point project to some degree through the actions of the administration over the summer. I'd like to take a moment, though, to look forward. Obviously, by taking that action, we've now jeopardized hundreds of millions of dollars in federal match necessary for this upcoming construction season. And given the very long lead times for construction this year, or just in general, and now the uncertainty that exists around this summer construction season, when do we need those general funds to be put forward to provide the contractors looking to carry out this work this summer the certainty they need to actually be able to plan in a fiscally responsible manner for the work that we all would hope for them to do? Can you give me some expectation as to when we might need those general funds available to provide those businesses certainty?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Schrage. Yeah, we've been, you know, when this occurred, I mean, we had a hard look at, you know, what our available match was at the time. The additional, it's over $30 million that was, you know, still there. We had some carryover from the prior year. So we have it on slide, I'm not sure what number that's, slide five, which really kind of lays out one thing that was going on, and this was the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program. You know, when we were doing Amendment 2, and I think this was the time, you know, when everyone was talking about we got to get the projects out. We had a plan in Amendment 2 that we went out to public notice that was what we thought we would have for the full amount of match. Then after we had actually not finalized that STIP Amendment 2 when the reappropriations happened and the governor vetoes. So when we went and finalized STIP Amendment 2, what we had to reflect was the amount of available match. So right now, if you were to go look at finalized approved STIP Amendment 2, that's our plan for this year. Right now, what we're saying is, you know, we have the bigger plan with the additional match. But when we look at our project delivery schedules, and there's about $800 to $850 million worth of projects and obligations or authorizations, I guess I would say, because we do more than just, it's more than just construction projects. There's programs, there's utilities, there's lots of different elements to a project delivery. But we have the match to get through July 1 with our healthy construction season. It's after July 1 that additional that we'd be missing out on. So we're really right now focused on that. We're not slowing down. People, as they're going delivering projects, we're telling all our staff, you know, you just keep going, and as they come available, we're going to be advertising them. So the disruption would occur, you know, after July 1.
Commissioner, the what I'm wrestling with is we're going to hear different testimony tomorrow. So that's what I'm wrestling with, mm-hmm. and it's hard for me to know what's accurate. Representative Bynum.
Thank you. Co-Chair Josephson, if we go to slide six really quick, through the chair, Cascade Point timeline funding considerations. I'd be remiss if I did not bring up Cascade Point, specifically the Alaska Marine Highway, and how these two things might be linked. On this slide, we really talk about stage one. When this happened, as far as putting the appropriation to use to build this section of road, as you can imagine, being from Southeast and specifically from Ketchikan, District 1, I did receive a lot of feedback from my community about this. There's a lot of concern about our highway system, how this particular plan is going to link into the long-term range of what's happening right now with the Marine Highway. We've had lots of conversations with the Marine Highway Operating Board talking about long-range vision, construction of new mainliners, reconnection, or would like to have some conversations about it, southern reconnection, specifically the study that's being put forward for connection to Hyder, but reestablishing also our connection to Prince Rupert. So this is a big obligation. And I think there's maybe a bit of a misunderstanding about how this actually plays into a bigger scheme or the bigger vision about what we want for the Marine Highway. I was hoping that you might be able to talk a little bit about not only this specific decision and how it impacts the Cascade Point, but then following on stages or phases of how this is actually going to fit into the long-range plan for where we currently sit looking at the Marine Highway.
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Bynum. The Alaska Marine Highway System, the long-range plan that was recently finished, which is a good plan. But one of the elements of it was in the recognition that, you know, to reduce operating costs long term, extending roads, shortening ferry runs is part of that plan, and that's written into the plan that was approved. So Cascade Point really is that. We're making the most of the road infrastructure to reduce the length of the runs in North Lynn Canal, and that's you know, to reduce the time and to reduce the cost of running the ferries.
Follow up. Representative Byron. Absolutely appreciate that. Understand that. Obviously, we know that we've had some major issues with operating our current fleet, keeping boats in the water and keeping them moving. And so I think that there's a bit of a disconnect with my community and understanding where we're actually going with this and how these dollars may or may not be directly impacting keeping vessels underway. Yes, I understand we want to deploy for a long-term plan, but I'm just really trying to understand how this specific piece of work is going to play into that and how it is different than the monies that we are actually using for the Marine Highway Services itself. Because I know, you know, I think people forget that this is part of highway money with highway match as opposed to keeping a vessel on the water and going to a port. And that's what I was hoping you could clarify for me.
Sure. Further comment?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum. Yeah, absolutely. And we could sure provide the committee with the list of the different funding types that we leverage for the Alaska Marine Highway System. You know, we've done more and more with all of our funding types just to make sure that, you know, we're keeping the ferry system running and in good repair. So there's a good story there. I think, you know, our director, Craig Tornga, has just done an amazing job on the maintenance side. We had a 98.5% uptime for 2024 and 2025 for the ships that we have. We've really been investing in the overhauls. Some of our ferry overhauls are going longer, but that's because we're doing more and just trying to make sure that we're set up as we tackle this idea of new mainliners and really replacing these old vessels one at a time. And just, you know, we advertised for construction the Tustamina replacement vessel just on Friday. That's going to be a $300+ million investment for the state of Alaska. That absolutely, I mean, that the Tustie's over 60 years old. I went to the 60th birthday party. That's absolutely needed. So we've got some good momentum right now and doing some good things there.
One quick follow-up.
Sure. Go ahead, Representative Byron.
Thank you, Co-Chair Joseph, and through the chair. I just would hope that as we move forward through the session here, that when we talk about the stages of work that's necessary and specifically how it relates to Cascade Point, if the department could incorporate that into the presentations we're going to be seeing as we move forward, that would be very helpful.
Co-Chair Schrage.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and through the chair. Sorry to come back to this. I'm trying to determine if you actually answered my last question, and I don't mean that with any insult. So I asked about when the general funds would need to be provided as match to reclaim the what's the exact dollar figure? It's near $600 million in federal funds that's jeopardized. Is that right? Can you give me a finer point on the number? How much is at stake, Commissioner Anderson?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Schrage. It's maybe I'll defer to Director Pannone because, you know, we have varying match rates. So it's not as easy as just saying 10%. Maybe Director Pannone.
Director Pannone, can you give me a finer number there?
Director.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Schrage. So on slide 5, what we're talking about is projects. So when we project our match, we're projecting federal funds at varying rates and then our advanced construction and August redistribution. So beyond July 1, we're looking to capture $400 to $500 million in projects, okay, plus ensure that we capture a reasonable August redistribution as well beyond July 1.
Okay. So, Co-Chair Joseph.
Yes, follow up.
Thank Co-Chair. You, sir. Through the chair. Sorry. So $400 to $500 million in jeopardy. And I asked when the funds would be needed in order to ensure that we do not lose out on those federal funds. And I heard, well, we're good through July 1 before we would potentially be missing out on opportunities. But that's the date at which construction would start. Is that right? When do the funds actually need to be provided for construction companies to be able to be to ramp up, to hire, to order materials, to be able to actually deploy projects on the ground in Alaska post July 1. When do they need that funding?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Schrage. Yeah, I can understand the confusion there. So when we secure funds, you know, so what happens is we go through this project we develop the plans, the environmental documents, all of this work, the utilities, the right-of-way secured, all this work gets completed. And then what we have to do was what's called certify the project. Once that project is certified, then we can send it to the Federal Highway Administration to secure the funds, the federal funds, and then that would also be the time when we would, you know, lock in that match. So that can happen. I mean, that's happening now. It'll happen over the next, and it actually happens all the way through till the end of the fiscal year, the end of September. So it's just this continuous process and continuing timeline that we go through. And yes, if some of these things after July 1, you know, we're certifying after July 1, and then some of these projects may not get advertised for construction because we don't advertise till after certifying and we secure the funds. And so that might be in October, November, and then those projects will be for the fiscal year, the next year, 27, for a construction year.
Co-Chair Josephson, follow-up, please.
Yes, follow-up.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, I mean, this is just bringing up more questions for me, frankly. So do you need the funding in hand to certify the project?
Through the chair, Representative Schrage, we certify the project, then we ask the federal government for authorization for the funds. To build the project.
So for the follow-up, for the $400 to $500 million that's at jeopardy, those projects, are those all certified currently?
Through the chair, Representative Schrage, no.
And what would be required to certify those projects so that they can go out to bid?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Schrage. That's where, you know, the design, the stamps, plans, specifications, estimates have to be completed. The environmental documents, if we had any land acquisitions, they have to be secured. Any utility agreements have to be secured. And so that's all these things. There's a group of projects right now that are going through that process.
Okay, follow up.
Follow up. Commissioner, sorry.
No. Co-chair Schrage. Not a commissioner, thank you. Not sure if that's a, yeah, we're not going to comment on that. Follow up through the chair. Thank you. So we are going through the certification process. That's the only thing holding us up. You don't need more money. Once you finish your internal process, certify the projects, they'll go out to bid, and we'll be able to take advantage of that $400 to $500 million in federal funds. Is that what I'm hearing?
Through the chair, Representative Schrage. So along with that is our federal fiscal year and our apportionments and our authority. And so our goal always is to make the most of the federal authorities that are given to us, the federal funds. To do that, you know, that we only get a certain amount as we go through the year of authority to make those obligations. So I guess as we get through the year and we're obligating these projects that become ready, our projections right now, and how we look at this is we have a tentative advertised schedule. You can go online and you can see the projects and when we're anticipating they're going to be delivered for construction. That's you know, it's before then that we would certify them and then advertise them and secure the funds. So it's the answer is, you know, well, between now and July 1, you know, with what we're seeing that's going to be certified and being secured, you know, we believe we have enough match. After July 1 is when we believe that most of the, you know, the match will be used up.
Representative Stapp, and then Representative Galvin.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair to Commissioner. I'm gonna pick up where he left off, Co-Chair Schrage, I think, Commissioner. So I think we all want you to get as many projects out to bid as possible, mm-hmm. Okay? And what I'm gonna try to break this down really Crayola style. We want to know if you need more money now to get as many projects as possible to contractors. Yes or no, through the chair.
Commissioner.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp. I mean, based on our projections, the match that we currently have we'll allow the projects to be bid and, you know, uninterrupted through July 1. After July 1, we wouldn't have the match to continue the program, which, you know, that would be that slug of projects from July to end of September.
Yeah.
Follow-up, Representative Staff.
Thank you, Chair. So I'm hearing you say, based on what we are projecting now, we have enough match. Are we projecting less projects going out to bid this year than the previous year, through the Chair?
Commissioner.
Through the Chair, Representative Stapp, there's a couple, we're predicting right now it would be a very similar to last year, if you look at, because we also, you know, last year after the direction that we received from, you know, legislature and a lot of folks, we leveraged what's called the advanced construction tool, which is where, you know, we can authorize projects now and then we can pay them in the future. We can pay, you know, we can convert those funds in the future. But so we had a big year last year. We weren't intending to do that again this year, but we won't have the match right now to do that full program.
Last follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes. Last follow-up, Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the Chair to Commissioner. As the Commissioner of DOT, would you like to know that you had the money on hand sooner or rather later, through the Chair?
Commissioner.
Through the Chair, Representative Stapp. We always like to have that assurance. We talked about the certainty. I mean, but, you know, when we submitted for the supplemental, you know, when we looked at our projections and our targets on the project delivery side of things, you know, going through July 1 with our existing match, we do not believe we'll see a disruption in projects, a delivery.
Okay. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the Chair. The job and the work that you have, Commissioner, it's hard to even get my head wrapped around. Thank you for all of the work you're doing. And I'm now referring to slide 5, and I don't sit on the Department of Transportation, so some of these questions may seem naive, but I think they're very important to my constituents, and they're very important to the state of Alaska. So I appreciate that now there seems to be some funds that you have to help with some match available. And in my district, for whatever reason, some of the projects that my constituents thought were going to happen are now pulled off the table. And I'm in Midtown Anchorage, just to give you that reference. Remember, 40% of Alaska's population is there, and I am all in for making sure that the Dalton Highway is working, for making sure that the ferries are working and everything else. And I think it's important that we pay attention to when I went to a few half-day meetings, thank you, to the department and to AMATS and the Anchorage work that's happening. I appreciate all of these gatherings of people to say, what can we do better in Anchorage? And the biggest concern right now has been around high volume, high intensity accident areas, whether it's with pedestrians or not. And there are some very clear projects that were taken off the table around traffic calming. And I believe that it was a matter of maybe around $30 million. I see that there's $31.9 million. So I just want to bring this up because it's important to my constituents. They've made resolutions year after year asking for us to do better, and particularly important for you to note is that it has been state roads that have had the most accidents. And when I say the most accidents, I don't say this lightly. We have had approximately 17 pedestrians die in Anchorage, more than in most other cities if you compare per capita in terms of the population. So we are truly in the red zone. And in my district, we're in the reddest of the red zone. So I think it's important that I bring this up and hear from you what I intend and hope to meet with you while you're in town to learn more about what I can do for our constituents and for the city of Anchorage to feel as though we're doing the best of the best, especially for our state roads there. And I think it's important for me to note that we have lost a 30-year-old this year. This last year, 30-year-old Sandra Blix, 33-year-old Francis Kentongan, 53-year-old Evan Larson, 79-year-old Gladys Graff, 34-year-old Donna Nielsen, 34-year-old Lorraine Williams, 65-year-old Carl Smith, 49-year-old Janice Tom, 43-year-old Wang Pen Tasa Song, 54-year-old Eric Black, 33-year-old Aaron Cleveland, 85-year-old Clara Mattis, 46-year-old Jason Felder. Those are only the pedestrians that I'm listing. Half of those were in my district. I am asking you, as I hear about all this extra money that we somehow have to fill the match, and I think that's very important that we do. I also am asking, what is going on with what I know my constituents have asked for? These are calming measures. I don't think they're exuberantly new things. They're things like lights, things like putting trees in the right space, things like that. So I am asking you in this conversation, what should we be doing differently to make sure that Anchorage isn't dropping off?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin. Yeah, any death on our highway system, on our, you know, within our corridors is tragic. There's no doubt. And that's absolutely something that we pay very close attention to. We want it right. We want to make safety work in Anchorage as well. The $30 million that's referenced, yeah, we did have a it's called Highway Safety Improvement Program funds that when it initially came to me, it was one of these project delivery statements where our teams were saying we can't, and this was Ingrid Gamble, we can't deliver Ingrid Gamble this year. We recognize, you know, a fair amount of legislators wrote a letter. We recognize that, okay, well, let's see what's possible here. We met with the mayor of Anchorage to really understand, you know, where they were at. And we did come up with a plan. We re-initiated the $30 million. We revised the plan. We put the money back in. We've talked to our teams about some different ways that we can just resource that project and get that thing across the finish line this year. So we are working through that.
Representative Galvin, follow up.
Thank you. Through the chair, Commissioner Anderson, thank you. I understand that you did restore around 30 of the $77 million that it was originally headed toward Anchorage. My district, I think, got one of the many projects, and there were many more in my district. I think A Street was the only one, and I'm not sure if even you're patching up the part near Northern Lights or Benson or Minnesota, but those were where most of... So the reason I bring this up is that I was told in my drive about, I spent a half day driving with DOT, that you all pay a lot of attention to your data, and you... I was given a list of where most of the accidents I think the way that was termed was some high cost accidents, so lots of damage to people and lots of damage to cars and things. So I was shown the list, and half of those on that list were in my district, and yet I believe maybe one project was restored. And maybe there's a reason behind that. I look forward to more conversations. But what's more important to me is that I think half of the funds got dropped back in, and I'm very grateful that you worked with the mayor to make that happen. And I'm asking for more. If we're looking at $1 billion roughly, then I hope that we will continue to strive for following the data, which I believe we're professing to do. And I encourage that if you do that, include our district's data, because I already listed the names, but it's way more than that. Every one of those people have a mother. Many have children. And not all of them were from Anchorage. Some of them were from rural Alaska. I appreciate that. But we can do better. We can do better for our community, and this is upon our department, AMAT, all of you working together, and I will be there also holding hands with you to encourage all of us to note that Department of Transportation is about making sure that our economic engine, our driver, is working still, and it's also about making sure that we are all safe. Thank you.
Then Representative Ballard, then we're going to close out.
Fabulous. Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and appreciate all the opportunities to ask questions. Thank you all for being here. I really appreciate it. Sorry to spend so much time on this. I just have a lot of constituents that are concerned. I've got this Meet the Match letter. I've never quite seen a coalition quite like that, and I'm just trying to really drill down on some basic facts for myself. Sorry if I'm a little repetitive or you've already answered the question, but it's better for me to make myself look silly and just be really certain about the answers. So my question is, you say you have the match through July 1. Are there projects that would not go to construction this summer if the additional match that was vetoed is not provided by July 1?
Commissioner.
The Chair, Representative Shragi. I would say it's possible, depending on, you know, how quickly our folks can deliver projects. There's always that. Our current projections are that we're going to be okay. There is one factor in here with our August redistribution. Our plans, and it's on one of our timelines, but our plans are due in, I think it's May is when, and then in July is our final, when we have to have all, our entire plan for what we're capable of securing in terms of federal funds. And, of course, last year that was $183.5 million, which that was a record. That was more than we ever thought was possible. Initial estimates this year about $66 million from federal highways, but we're going to be asking for quite a bit more than that. So there are some variables in there for sure.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Anderson. My very last follow-up is just from my perspective, you seem very calm about it. I mean, it as long as we get the money by July, no problem. I don't sense a lot of worry from you. I'm trying to just reconcile that with this Meet the Match letter I've gotten, where there's, in my view, an unprecedented coalition of businesses and that have come together and that seem really very concerned about us being able to provide the match to secure these federal funds. Why the concern and uncertainty from industry when I gather that everything's just fine from what we've heard today? Can you help me reconcile that at all, or do I just need to wait till tomorrow to hear from industry?
Commissioner.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Shragi. Yeah, I mean they have to be worried. This is their life earnings. You know, this is how they make their living. So. That understood on that front, absolutely. The certainty piece is important. And I will say, you know, having that match in place provides the certainty for the fiscal year. If we weren't to get the additional match that was asked for in the supplemental July 1, there will be projects that don't go on the street. If the match is available early, that adds more certainty. We don't object to that, that's for sure, at DOT. But, you know, we put in a supplemental request, you know, based on what we saw with our projections.
Okay. Thank you. That's good for today.
Representative Ballard.
Thank you. I'm going to circle back around to what the representative from Anchorage said in regards to Minnesota and I think Northern Lights. In regards to the incidents that have been happening through the chair, that have been happening in Anchorage, I'm kind of getting a little bit annoyed that it's constantly falling, that DOT is the problem. We have a leadership problem in the MOA, and when the assembly votes to remove crosswalks and just allow people to cross wherever they want to cross, it's going to wreak havoc on the state roads and also on the municipality roads. I was in a brief when I heard a sitting legislator say that you as DOT will have blood on your hands and that it's your responsibility and you're to blame, which was just atrocious. I have a road that is artillery road that's right there. It's an interchange coming off of Eagle River, and I have been fighting for this for amount of time I've been in office is 8 years. It's been going on for 15 years. We had money designated for it, $8 million. It's been siphoned all the way down. It was going to be a $22 million project. It's now up to $55 million. And nowhere in the MOA or the municipality of Anchorage cares about that particular road because it's in Anchor, or because it's in Eagle River. And I guess my ultimate question to you is, even if you fix those roads and or how they're requesting they be changed or altered, can you even guarantee that these are actually going to solve the deaths that should never have happened? Because I don't think people are recognizing the individuals that are hitting these people that have died are also traumatized. My daughter was one car back witness that was totally devastated. And I'm just trying to figure out if the road, the improvement that the DOT is going to do is going to say, okay, it's fixed, nobody should die anymore. Because I'm leaning more this is a leadership issue when we change laws that actually hurt those individuals to the point where they're dying.
Comment, Commissioner?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Allard. Yeah, the safety piece, you know, it can't just be engineering. It can't just be projects. There's the enforcement aspects, and we all know that, you know, enforcement matters. There's, you know, you've seen DOT going out and doing the emergency, the EMS, you know, providing the jaws of life so we can have faster response times. There's the education piece. We put a lot of money into getting out there, reflective gear, educating people how it's safe out there on the highway. So, yeah, absolutely. It's not just projects. There's a lot of factors that go into it, and it takes everybody. Yeah, DOT alone can't solve this problem.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Jefferson, through the chair. And I'm just going to continue with the same topic. It's incredibly devastating when any life is lost, especially so tragically and unnecessarily. And DOT relies on a lot of data, and I don't know, I don't expect you to have this data, but I know the Assembly in Anchorage decriminalized jaywalking in 2023, and I just wonder if that has anything to do with the number of deaths that occur in just the middle of the road, Anchorage, anywhere, and I don't expect you to have that information, but just for the representative to my left's information, maybe that is somewhere to start and look at data and gathering and see if that maybe was a mistake by the municipality to do that. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Joseph. And I just wanted to also say appreciate you having industry come tomorrow to speak with us and share some of the concerns that they might have or excitement about the opportunities that lie ahead. Commissioner Anderson, I was hoping, and through the chair, I was hoping that maybe you would give us some level of commitment that you would take some time to pay attention to that, the hearings tomorrow for finance, and that when you come back that you might be ready to have some level of response at the time you come back and or before you come back to help us gauge what we're going to hear tomorrow and then maybe a little bit of follow-up information from you guys. Would you be committed to doing that follow-up for us?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Bynum. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Representative Stapp, the yep. final question.
Thank you, Co-Chair Joseph, through the chair. Very quickly on the topic of safety, since we're just kind of on it. So we have this new overpass over the Richardson Highway by my house. It goes over the train tracks, and I've never seen a bunch of cars flipped over in the ditch until you guys built the overpass. I know we built the overpass because we like safety, but the train came like once a day at 2 in the morning, and now I see cars flipped over all the time coming off the overpass. So Is there any way maybe you can give me like the methodology we use for like safety? Because I can't prove it because I have no data, but empirically it would seem that the overpass is way more dangerous than the train tracks ever were, through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yeah, not having the data. I mean, typically overpasses are to reduce conflicts with, you know, railroad. I mean, we do have a big effort right now, like on the Parks Highway, to get all grade separations for all those railroad tracks across the board, just because there's a conflict there that's a pretty serious one. So, I mean, that's the method we take. But we can get back to you if we have any data on that.
I want to thank the three of you, Director Sanders, Commissioner Anderson, and Director Pannone, for your presentation. I know a lot of work went into this PowerPoint. I encourage the committee to look at it. It's mostly historical document at this point, since we've got a match to worry about or fund, but it's their sort of history of describing how those funds came to the point where they are. Our next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, January 27th at 1:30 p.m. At that meeting, we'll introduce and have our first hearing on House Bill 283, entitled Appropriations Supplemental. Then we'll hear from the Legislative Finance Division as it presents its overview of the governor's FY27 budget. With that, I'm going to adjourn this meeting at 3:22 on the 26th. Thank you.